Hi, this is Robert Scheer with another edition of Scheer Intelligence, where the intelligence comes from my guests. In this case, it's a very famous director, Steve James, twice nominated for an Oscar, and a well-known journalist who actually broke the story that we had discussed, David Lindorf. And it's interesting with Oppenheimer, the movie getting so much attention. This is actually, in some ways, a more interesting story. It's in a documentary called A Compassionate Spy. And it cuts to core issues about the making of the bomb at Los Alamos, the ethics. But it also deals with somebody who I think is a very brave documentary, because it actually treats with respect someone who, as the title says, is a compassionate spy. A genius young man from Townsend Hall High School in Queens at the age of, and then he goes to Harvard at the age of 18. He's recruited to work on one of the most sensitive aspects of the making of the atomic bomb, the triggering mechanism, the implosion device. And everybody credits him with having been really brilliant and connected with it in his work. And he decides, along with a close friend, consultation, that, you know, the original justification for the bomb was not quite there. The Germans were clearly losing the war. And even when the bomb was dropped, Japan was defeated. And he thought, now let the director and the original journalist talk about it. But he was saying there was no really need to even test it, let alone use it to kill hundreds of thousands of people in Hiroshima and Nagasaki. And what's involved here is a great mystery story, because who is Ted Hall and what did he do? And, you know, talk about the nuanced examination of the morality of all this. Who wants to go first?
Go ahead, Dave.
All right. Jump in. All right. Ted was a remarkable guy who had a strong moral compass, and he felt that, first of all, and people need to know this, the Russians were our key ally against the Nazis. They were their, our Red Army was doing the brunt of the fighting against the Wehrmacht, and here we were not. We were trying to keep them from even knowing about the Manhattan Project. And then Groves, right around the time in the fall when Ted was thinking about these issues, Groves was at a dinner with the British.
Groves is the army official who was in charge of Los Alamos.
General Groves. And he said at the dinner, well, you know, this target of the bomb never was really the Germans. It's the Russians. It's to control the Russians. And this went around the camp, you know, that message. And he was really upset about it. And so he had been thinking already that he should give the bomb to the Russians as the only way he could think of for avoiding a U.S. monopoly on the bomb for years after the war.
Yeah, I mean, it should be mentioned, the United States entered the war quite late. In fact, there was a lot of resistance and even considerable pro-German sentiment in the United States. The question was really, and this was a very idealistic young man, and obviously quite brilliant. And as the movie reveals, this is a really fascinating movie, A Compassionate Spy. His brother, his older brother, actually was the inventor of the Minuteman missile and was a colonel in the Air Force, right? And so, you know, we talk about patriotism at that time, defeating the Nazis, stopping fascism, that was very important, right? And the Russians actually are the ones who did the brunt of the war against Germany, but there was also a question about whether they would enter the war against Japan. And there's a whole big argument about, was the bomb dropped to prevent the Russians from being part of the occupation of Japan? There's a lot of analysis and so forth. But I want to get to the moral issue. And the Oppenheimer movie and the whole Oppenheimer story, obviously, there are parallels because Oppenheimer, like this young man, had been on the left. He had different views of foreign policy. His patriotism was challenged. He was blacklisted at a key point. But here you have an amazing American figure, American hero, brilliant, and he contributes to this war effort as maybe as profoundly as any other person, and yet has moral issues that unfortunately others didn't have. I mean, the bombing targets were picked at the University of California, and they picked a time during the day when you would maximize the number of deaths, for example. So let me ask you, Steve James, why you got this project from Dave here. What is your goal with the film? And I must say, my hat's off to you for daring even to suggest that this compassionate spy had a moral basis. I mean, we are at a time where, you know, when Daniel Ellsberg, an expert on nuclear war fighting, revealed things, you know, he faced a long time in jail. And now you have people like Julian Assange facing hard times. So talk about our character here, the key character, and his remarkable wife. This story, yeah, this movie really works because you have the wife, his wife of, 50 years? In the movie, some point it says 60, but I think it was more like 50, I don't know. Tell us about it, the character that drives this movie. And this is a great movie to watch. I want to be unequivocal here. Powerful. I don't think I've ever seen the subject explored in this complex and profound a way. What was the moral, spy, you got somebody to kill him, get him. No, complex figure, complex subject. Nuance is a word I think you've used. So take it from there.
Yeah, well, first of all, thanks for how your response to the film. It means a lot to us, a great deal to us. You know, I think when Dave first told me about Ted, I knew nothing about Ted Hall. Like most people, I knew nothing about him. Dave educated me considerably on that. Reading the book Bombshell, where we featured the authors in the film, helped a lot. But I think it was when we went to Cambridge, England, and sat down with Joan that it really impacted me personally to want to tell the story of the film. I was totally taken with Joan's brilliance, with her commitment, with her love for Ted, and her steel spine, and the way in which she helped Ted through those difficult years. And of course, she's a great storyteller. And then finding out that there was actual archival video from different sources of Ted so that he could speak to these issues from the grave, as it were. Well, that meant I wanted to do it. And, you know, I think the thing about Ted that's remarkable to all of us that were involved with the film is, you know, he's a guy that acted on conscience in a profound way. You know, there were a lot of scientists at Los Alamos who had real misgivings about what was going on, who had misgivings about not sharing it with the Soviets. These misgivings were even voiced in meetings, in conversations. And Ted was one of the very few people who actually decided to act on it. And he did it at the age of 19. It's just kind of remarkable. And, you know, you could say, well, he was naive, he was young, he was brash. I don't think he was any of those things. He, you know, his analysis of what could potentially happen in the world post-World War II with the U.S. having the bomb all to itself, you know, he didn't have access to intelligence documents that spelled out what the U.S. planned to do. He wasn't meeting with Truman. He wasn't meeting with the generals, but he was smart enough to understand what could happen. And I think our film demonstrates, and history has demonstrated, that he had good reason to be worried. And his reasons for passing the secrets, whether you agree with them or not, were grounded in not in naivete or brashness, but in real thoughtfulness.
Yeah, so introduce the subject more fully. I mean, tell us what he did, why it was so significant. You know, the Rosenberg case had happened. And they really were accused of stealing rather minor or conveying rather minor information. These were the crown jewels. This was serious stuff and would advance his speculation as the Russians would have got it in any way by, say, 10 years, but they managed to get it in, what, 4 years or 5 years and change the whole balance of power, right?
Ted was recruited, you know, as an 18-year-old out of Harvard. He was graduating from Harvard with a physics degree at the age of 18, which is remarkable. He goes out there as a junior member of the team, along with some other recent graduates, and he proves himself to be very capable. And so he is then promoted to working on the implosion implosion efforts, which were vital and crucial to the way the bomb detonated and created the chain reaction. So it was very important work. And Ted was excited about the science. I mean, like a lot of the scientists, he was excited about science. He's Jewish. His parents were from Russia. He shared a lot of the concerns about Nazi Germany and with Germany getting the bomb. So it's understandable in so many ways why he and so many of these scientists, many of them Jewish too, wanted to work on this bomb and do this. But it, you know, while he was out there, it didn't take him long to recognize and think through what were the ramifications. And in this way, you know, I don't know Oppenheimer's story well enough to know if Oppenheimer from the start had any of these reservations. My sense is that he was so caught up in leading this effort and doing an amazing job in leading the effort that he didn't permit himself those kinds of concerns. Well, Ted did. And so Ted was moved to act 1 year after he got to Los Alamos. He started to pass secrets to the Soviets. He didn't wait till after Hiroshima. He didn't even wait till after the Trinity test. He started to pass them early because he foresaw what Oppenheimer really didn't see until after the war.
Well, but Oppenheimer came under the suspicion of the government because he was on the left. He was in Berkeley on the left and so forth. And the real issue was, you know, the power of this weapon. This was changing, right? I forget the famous quote from Oppenheimer, but I've seen death of humanity, right? And they were, I've talked to some of these people, you know, Hans Bethe, the famous German scientist who was very principally involved. And I interviewed Edward Teller when I was working at the LA Times on all this stuff. And they were cognizant that this would change everything on this planet. And we're seeing it right now. The relevance of this movie, A Compassionate Spy, is that it's discussing issues right now because we are up against not the Soviet Union, but the anti-Soviet Union in the sense of Putin. I mean, this is the non-communist Soviet Union, but nonetheless, they have nuclear weapons. So does China, you know, so does Pakistan, so does Israel, and so forth. And the reality is that there's a limit to what you can do unless, and your movie discusses this a bit, unless you do a preemptive strike. And one of the arguments was that the United States, in your movie, under Truman, that there at least were some people planning a preemptive strike. This is even before they knew how far the Russians were going to take them out. And they thought you needed 300 of these bombs to do it. They think they were up to 200 or something, if I recall your movie correctly. But that in itself, I mean, to bomb the old Soviet Union back to the Stone Age, you know, and the fact is we went through decades now where we stopped thinking about the bomb and we've gotten these limited wars over it. Now we have your movie, which I think significantly advances the discussion of Oppenheimer, because, you know, here was someone who actually intruded on history in a way that Oppenheimer didn't. Oppenheimer went along, you know, with the whole thing. Here is somebody said, no, I don't believe in American exceptionalism. I don't think it's a good thing for one power to have it. And we do know there's been a checkmate kind of thing. But the fact of the matter is, at this season, amazingly enough, is the season in which Hollywood, and I should say your movie is being distributed, made by Magnolia. It's a participant film. They make great films. There's a legendary history of great documentaries made a participant, which you acknowledge in the dedication of your movie. But the fact of the matter is, we are up against a reality that we have blocked out for decades now. Older people like myself hid under tables and desks, and you know, and you ran through the missile crisis with Cuba and everything. But then we forgot about the bomb. We actually, I don't know if we came to love the bomb. We certainly came to forget about it. Now you can't. You can't. It's right there. And a nuclear-armed Russia, as you know, we're poking the bear. What's going to happen? And so the issues you're discussing are very real. Would a U.S. monopoly of this weapon, which couldn't be maintained anyway, others found ways to make a bomb once it was seen to be feasible, would it have been a safer world? And you know, your protagonist here, he was suspicious of that. Maybe we should discuss
that. I'll tell you a funny story. I have a cousin, a very close cousin, who was a cop in Arizona. And when I told him about, I was making a movie, and he said, "What is it on?" I told him the story. And he said, "So, in other words, if Ted Hall hadn't done what he did, the Russians wouldn't be able to threaten to use nukes in Ukraine, and it probably wouldn't have even happened." And I said, "Well, you know, that might be true, but the only way that the Russians wouldn't have the bomb today would have been if the U.S. had completely wiped the country out and killed, you know, 20 to 40 million Russians, because that was the plan to keep them from getting the bomb, and it probably would have." But you have to think in terms of what the U.S. would have done if it had the bomb. And I think, you know, look at all the history of the people, the millions of people who have been killed in U.S. wars since 1945. And there was no qualms or compunction about killing millions of people in Indochina and in Korea without the bomb. If they had the bomb, I'm sure it would have been done more often and faster.
Yeah. Well, why don't we talk about the movie? Because you are the original journalist who did this work. And I want to ask the question, why was he never prosecuted for this?
Well,
he was followed, he was observed, right?
He was identified by Russian spy cables that were known to Hoover in 1950, and he started a full investigation into Ted and interrogated him and Saville Sachs, his courier, in 1951. And then at the end of 51, it all died into nothing. And they didn't go after him again until the mid 60s. And the reason we talk about it was in the film suspected that it was because of his brother being so important to the Air Force as the head of their ICBM program.
That would be enough of a reason?
Well, think about it. I mean, the Russians were ahead of the U.S. in missiles. That was what Kennedy ran on, was how far ahead the Russians were. Some of it was bogus, some of it was true. I mean, they were the ones who launched Sputnik. They had better rockets, and the U.S. was desperate to catch up. They had this genius, Ted's brother, 11 years older, who knew all about rockets, studied at Caltech, and captured V2 rockets and studied them, and he came up with the solid fuel Minuteman project. He designed the motors for the Atlas and the Titan. They needed him. They couldn't have done it without him, and so they were desperate to make sure that he didn't get that he wasn't like a, you know, casualty on the side from arresting Ted. What would he have survived having a younger brother who was a known communist spy in the 50s? I doubt it. And they certainly did.
And the other point we make in the film is that, you know, the FBI felt, and I think with good cause, that that the Venona documents, which was the key to them knowing what Ted had done, would not be something that they could use for a lot of reasons in court to prosecute Ted. And so they needed Ted, they needed other evidence, either Ted confessing or him having told people who could testify against him. And Ted was extremely careful. He never spoke about this. In fact, he and Joan, before the FBI even came calling, made a point of not speaking about it at home for fear that someone might be bugging their home, even before he even knew that the FBI was on their tail. So that's how careful he was.
Yeah, talk about this couple. And you actually have her in your film. I have to teach an ethics class. I could build a whole class around your movie this coming. I will show it and so forth, because, you know, the ethics are complex here. What was the right thing? And you actually have the son of their close friend saying, no, my father was a dangerous man who did the wrong thing. And then by the end of your movie, he's kind of saying, well, maybe it's more complex. But as a filmmaker, you know, a very successful filmmaker, you have taken on a subject that I think most people in the history of Hollywood would have avoided. Seriously, well, I mean, you're asking the audience to respect, at least to the point of considering seriously, the ethics of a man who actually has, you know, maybe as opposed to the Rosenbergs even, was actually a spy. He actually
absolutely
did. Yes, he was, and to the end of his days, because you do have him at the end after he's got serious medical, you know, he's going to die, still at his position. And he and his wife, I don't think it was contrived on your part, I think just show on the screen, particularly his wife, as incredible human beings. Yeah. I'm amazed that you got this movie made, frankly. I am.
Well, thank you. I mean, we couldn't have done it without Joan, his wife, without question. I mean, you know, one of the things that we found that was interesting is that, you know, Ted in later years did have some doubts about what he had done. And he expresses some of those in the film when it became very clear what Stalin had done in the Soviet Union, when it became very clear as to what kind of regime that was and what they were capable of and what they had done, it did give Ted pause. And I think what's important is that he came to realize that his reasons for doing what he did weren't out of a devotion to Stalin or the Soviet government. It was out of a devotion to the lives of Russian people. And that's where the title comes from, where he says he did it out of compassion. What's interesting is that Joan, of the two of them, Joan is much more the hardcore in her conviction about what Ted did. She is not interested in any reconsideration of his act. She believes so fully that he did the right thing that she makes no room for doubt. And I find that really fascinating and interesting, because she really did protect him from himself at different junctures. He wanted to confess when the Rosenbergs were on trial, because he knew that what he had done was far more serious than the Rosenbergs. And he thought, well, he goes to Joan and he says, well, maybe if I confess, I can save them. And she said, you won't save them, you'll just destroy us. And so she kept him from doing something that would have been very self-destructive to him and his family. And so, you know, Joan is a tough customer, and I love the fact that we were able to show her strength and conviction as well as her love for Ted.
Right. And you're smart.
I should mention Joan died in June 14th at 94. She got to see the film.
She died this year?
Yeah.
Yeah, she just died about a month ago.
Oh, I didn't realize that. She's a very attractive person in the film.
Remarkably.
And it should be made clear that she's innocent of the act, because she didn't know him.
Absolutely.
Right? Yeah, she is. People should not have the idea that she somehow was the femme fatale who goaded him into doing this, you know. On the contrary, he confessed to her after this was all over. He was back at the University of Chicago, right? And where yes. she was a student. And he was saying, maybe you don't want to marry me because I've got this thing hanging, and it's a big thing. You're going to end up having children, and you are can be legitimately accused of the most important theft of a secret, right? A military secret that had occurred. Maybe Fuchs, the British scientist, similar. But, you know, and she, sticks to her. She says, no, I agree with the reasoning here. And so, and she could have bailed then or bailed after, you know, hey, wasn't on my dime. And in fact, in the Julius Ethel Rosenberg case, Ethel was really quite innocent. Nobody ever nailed her. It was her brothers had something to do with it. And they used her as bait to get Julius to change, and then she died. She was killed by the government, knowing that they knew, Judge Kaufman and the others knew that she was not an agent to this. But tell us more. It's a great story of journalism in a way, and maybe David, you should talk about it. You guys knew each other through a previous movie, right?
I was a reporter that was on camera in Steve's film Abacus. That was how I got to know Steve. And that was such a brilliant movie. And he handled—
Tell us about the movie.
Well, he handled a complicated story about a bank scandal in the fiscal crisis. And he did it so well that, anyone watching that movie would have understood it, which is really quite something. I was so impressed with that and with how he humanized the Chinese family that had this little family-owned bank, that I just thought, my God, he's got to do this film about Ted. And he jumped for it.
But tell us how you got involved with the story and how then Joan wrote to you.
I wrote a piece in 2017 to commemorate Hiroshima and Nagasaki. I did that. I used to do that every 5 years or so. And I was trying to come up with another angle. So I thought I'd look up who these spies were. That there's about eight of them that spied on the Manhattan Project. And there was this rogues gallery in the Google search of photographs. And one of them was this pimply faced kid. And it said Ted Hall. I mean, he looked like a high school kid, and he had
handsome
pimples on his forehead and stuff, you know.
His future wife kept referring to him as very attractive and handsome. I just want to—
Yes, it's later, after he got rid of the pimples. But, when you looked at that one picture from his badge at the Manhattan Project, you say, this is a spy, And I looked him up, and I thought, my God, if he did that as a teenager and gave critical information to the Russians, he deserves the Nobel Prize posthumously. So I wrote a piece, a very provocative piece, saying that he and Klaus Fuchs should both get Nobel Peace Prizes for having saved the world from a U.S. with a monopoly on the bomb after the war. And about 2 weeks later, I got a letter saying, Dear Dave, I'm reading your article about Ted Hall with tears in my eyes. I'm his widow, and we need to talk. So, I picked up on that right away.
You didn't pick up on it right away. You waited until your own daughter was graduating in England.
No, I when I had the money to go there to see my daughter graduate from Oxford, I told her we were coming, and she said, "Oh, then you have to come to my house." We were pen pals.
Okay.
And so she said,
"Yeah." But wait a minute, you have just said something that is very provocative. He should have been given the Nobel Peace Prize for doing this, and that Fuchs should be. And now I applaud your courage. I do in saying that. But make the argument. I mean, if you guys got the time, because you say it in relation to the film.
Well, my thinking was, and I still hold to it, that, the world has come pretty close to nuclear war on a number of times. It's a couple of times it's been saved by low-ranking people who put the safety of humanity over their own personal safety. Russian and US people have done that. But, you know, in the end, there's been 78 years of no use in wartime again since the August 9th Nagasaki bombing. And I attribute that completely to mutual assured destruction, because every time it's come close, and when you read the stories, somebody flinched and said, you know, we can't do this because we can't pull it off without destroying our own country. It's a suicide murder pact, you know. So it hasn't happened, and I don't think it'll happen in Ukraine for the same reason, but it can come very close. So, you know, looking back at the undeniable 78 years, I think that's quite an accomplishment already. So that's why I thought a Nobel Peace Prize is in order.
You know,
I just want to add that the film doesn't make that position. This is Dave's strong view. The film is very sympathetic towards what Ted did and humanizing him, as you've said, and helping us understand him and not vilifying him. And to me, that was important. Whether he deserves the Nobel Peace Prize, that's a whole different issue for me personally.
But, you know, it's interesting because many of the scientists, we don't have a head count or so forth. This was the tension between them and General Groves and the military people. They knew, you know, the justification was only that the Nazis could get this weapon. Once it was made clear that the Nazis were not going to have this weapon, then the question is, why are you continuing? And what's more, when the Nazis have surrendered, why are you using this against the Japanese, who were not developing, as far as we know, didn't have anything like it? And we should point out to people, the weapon we're talking about is minor compared to what we go on to develop.
Oh, yeah.
You know, Dave here reminds me of Lawrence Ferlinghetti. I don't know if you come from the same part of the country, but Lawrence Ferlinghetti was a commander in the U.S. Navy, and he visited Hiroshima. Well, he visited Nagasaki right after the bombing. And it said, he said it made him an instant pacifist. The recognition, and the scientists did have it, a large number of them, even though there was a party at Los Alamos, even though they celebrated the successful explosion, there's no question that they knew you're unleashing the potential for the end of all life on the planet. I know you guys are being very patient with your time, but, you know, there's a reason, I think, why the Oppenheimer movie is so important and successful commercially. And I think hopefully it will extend to A Compassionate Spy, your documentary, because I think your argument takes it one step further, an important step further. And that really is the limit of patriotism. What we're really talking about, because you have a lot of countries, a number of countries that have this weapon or some very higher powered variation of it, and they have their nationalism, they have their patriotism, you know, and, you know, one could argue about whether if we had a monopoly, how dangerous would the world be. There's a scene in your movie you got out of the clippings where Harry Truman seems goofy when he goes on the radio. I mean, I had to go back and rewind it and watch it again and again. He is almost giddy.
He is giddy.
Yeah.
He is giddy.
That scene.
Well, yeah.
As a filmmaker.
Well, this is when he announced to the world, really, what the U.S. had done in Hiroshima and Nagasaki. It's a very important historical announcement, and there's film of that which we have. And what's interesting is that between the takes, we also have that too. So he puts on his serious face for when he's speaking about what they did, but in between, he's laughing and positively giddy. And, you know, I think history has shown that he was beside himself with, and the U.S. leadership was beside itself with this profound development and this advantage that they knew they had and that they were going to take into the post-war world. And they didn't fail to exercise that power as needed. And so, yeah, I mean, he was
twice, you know, in the 40s, in the 46 and 48, they threatened Russia with attack. So they were using it.
And that scene in Oppenheimer where Oppenheimer goes to visit Truman is actually quite accurate. The exchange they had, that when Oppenheimer said he felt like he had the blood of people on his hands, Truman was sort of beside himself with who is this crybaby? You know, it's like, this is what we have to do. And so, you know, it's rather chilling. And when you see that moment in the film where he's laughing uproariously and then puts on his serious face to say something serious, it's very disconcerting.
Yeah. And remember that Truman was the haberdasher from St. Louis, and he had been replaced Henry Wallace, who actually was much more open to trying to understand the Russians and what their concern. And there's actually lying about this weapon and you know, in the conference they had where Stalin was there. But I think your movie opens up the major argument about where we are now and how we got here. And that's why I think it's called A Compassionate Spy, and it's opening August 4th, I think is the date. And hopefully it'll get a good distribution, particularly given the attention to Oppenheimer, there should be. But also, let's conclude this though with the timeliness of it. The fact of the matter is, we're not just talking, first of all, about the old Soviet Union, which is gone, but the weapons remain. And now we know that in country after country, they have these weapons. It turned out once you made the bomb, then it could be made by others. That is the... You know, hey, oh, it can be done. Yes, well, we could figure it out. You really didn't need spying. There is actually not much evidence that other, you know, nations that have developed it relied heavily on the spying. They're able to do it. You know how to do it, and you actually can advance the weapon. So we are at a moment in history where the concerns of your 18, 19-year-old character in here, right, are more relevant than ever and strangely absent from the thoughts of most people of any age. It is a very peculiar moment. At least when the Cuban Missile Crisis was on, it had the attention of all Americans. But we are now poking the bear, whatever you think about what's happening in Ukraine, or whatever you think what's happening with China and Taiwan and so forth, we are in a situation where most people have lost perspective of what these weapons do. You know, this is really quite startling and underscores the importance of the movie you have made, because it confronts it, you know, front and center. Should the bomb have been made? Should it have been used? You know, and there's a real compelling reason to think, no, that it shouldn't have been made. You know, now whether it would have been made elsewhere, people would have tried, we don't know to what degree. But the fact is, we are living in a time right now where the end of life on this planet could happen this week.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, you know, with conventional weapons, there's real damage in Russia, Moscow, or Petersburg, and at some point, or you've already called these people war criminals. They're not going to go into Nuremberg. You know, are there not people in their system who would say, we have to push the button. We have to do this, because there were people, once you, your movie makes a very important point. We, I think you say it at the end, we are the only people who've ever used these bombs to kill people, right?
Yep.
You want to conclude on that? Or that, let me ask you one final question. You're an honored filmmaker. You're a success. And you decided to make this movie now, right? I mean, how long did you work on this?
It was at least a couple of years in the making, if not a little longer, because of the pandemic.
Yeah. But, you know, and you were able, to find a humanity in the scoundrel. No, seriously. I mean, I'm not saying he was a scoundrel, but, you know, people are having trouble finding humanity in Edward Snowden or Julian Assange, yeah, or they did in Daniel Ellsberg. Right. Well, those people didn't steal any military secrets, and they in any real way. I mean, they challenged what the government was doing to us and our privacy and so forth. Ellsberg showed a scholarly study about Vietnam and that was withheld from the people. He didn't give secrets about how you trigger a nuclear explosion. Your movie raises the possibility that, and you don't agree, I gather, with Dave, that they should get the Nobel Prize, but nonetheless, I just got a message. We should wrap this up. So let me put the $64 question to you. As an artist, you got into the brain of Ted and Joan. Did it not change your thinking? Were you not compelled?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think I took many things away from this project, but I think one of the things first and foremost is, it, in fact, how we define courage and patriotism, even, like you said earlier. It's sort of like, from Ted's point of view, he acted on conviction. He acted to try to do right by the world. That was his focus. And he worried about his own country as much as he loved his country and as much as he wanted his country to prevail and the Allies to prevail in World War II. He acted on conscience and out of a deep concern for humanity. And that I admire in him. And sometimes that takes, you know, sometimes that kind of courage and conviction takes a path that we do not expect, and especially in this day and age, as you were just saying, when people are ready to vilify everyone for anything. I mean, he really was like Edward Snowden in a sense. He went into a situation, a true believer in what he was doing, and then he started to have real questions about what he was doing and where it would lead, and that provoked him to act in a way that some people would view as traitorous. But he followed his conscience and his convictions. And for that, I think he deserves great respect.
And he went on to lead a scientifically productive life.
Absolutely. Some people think he might've won a Nobel Prize in physics had he not done what he'd done, because he pulled back in so many ways in his subsequent career from some of the things to avoid any suspicion. But some people think that he could very well have won a Nobel Prize in physics. I think is possible.
He went into biophysics for that reason. I would say there's an interesting quote in the movie that I think is that Ted said that really explains him. He said when he was older, looking back at it, and knowing what he knows now about Stalin, he said, I probably wouldn't have had the stomach if I'd known that to do what I did. But I think that the young man who did that did the right thing.
And let me just throw in one last, because they're going to pull the plug on me here. We always ask the question about the person who objects and does this, the Ted Halls. But what about all the other people who went along? Why didn't they question it? Why didn't they challenge it in any kind of way? You know, and that question you could ask about Julian Assange, and not just, okay, Julian Assange did that or Edward Snowden, but what about the other people who all knew all right. this and don't speak up? And you know, your movie forces that issue because you don't demonize this guy. You make us confront him. On that note, let me end this. I want to thank the movie, by the way, A Compassionate Spy, opening August 4th. I've been talking to Steve James, the director, and David Lindorf, the person who originally broke the story, did the investigative work. It's a Magnolia Pictures. It's created by participant. And I want to thank Laura Condogerian and Christopher Ho at KCRW, the FM NPR station in Santa Monica, for hosting this and posting it. Joshua Shearer, our executive producer, Diego Ramos, who writes the intro, Max Jones, who does all the video, and the JKW Foundation in memory of Gene Stein, who did a lot of independent journalism worthy of respect. See you next week with another edition of Sheer Intelligence.